May it please the court, I am Michael Linehan, and I represent Abbott Ambulance of Illinois. With the court's permission, I shall utilize 8 minutes for my argument and 2 minutes for rebuttal. We certainly recognize that there can be instances in which NLRB orders are entitled to deference, but we also understand, Your Honors, that those come with some substantial caveats. They must not be arbitrary or capricious. The Supreme Court has told us they must be rational. This court has noted in Antelope Valley that they cannot be unreasonable. And they will also not be entitled to deference, as you have noted, Judge Ginsburg, in your recent decision in Mayo Contractors of America, where the board has failed to apply the proper legal standard. We think that under any of these criteria, this board order emphatically is not entitled to enforcement. A fact I think the board has tacitly conceded at page 26 of its brief when it acknowledges that this is an unusual situation. It may be one in which the court would be inclined to, quote, bend the law, unquote, but it nonetheless implores you not to do so. We believe that these facts are overwhelming. They are conclusive, and significantly, they are not only not contested, but they are admitted. Here we had the determinative vote in an NLRB election cast by an individual who had not actively worked in the voting unit for some 2 years prior to the election, and whose light duty assignment in a different job, in a different state, performing substantively different work for different supervision, had ended for lack of work some 7 months prior to the election.
Was she getting paid at the rate of a technician?
I beg your pardon, sir?
What rate was she getting paid at?
Judge, I can't make that representation to the court because I don't recall.
Suppose she was getting the same rate of pay that she received before the wrist injury, because she was still considered part of the group or whatever. Wouldn't she then have a community of interest with the EMTs or whatever they were called?
No, Judge, and the reason for that is because she was performing substantively different work.
Forget about what she was performing. If her rate of pay was the same, if they didn't dock her, if they didn't, and then the EMTs bargained collectively to get a higher rate of pay, presumably that would cover her.
Well, it would not cover her, sir, because she wasn't in the voting unit. She could not go into the voting unit because her physician determined prior to the election that she could never, ever again physically perform any of the work in the voting unit. There is no chance that she could ever return to that unit, and she had not been in that unit for some 2 years prior to the election.
I thought there was some evidence that suggesting that she was still hopeful of returning someday to the unit, receiving physical therapy and taking some training and so on.
Judge Ginsburg, she indicated in testimony that that was her hope, but she also recognized that that was a physical impossibility. Her physician had determined, and she agreed with it, she was physically unable of returning to that unit. She acknowledged that in her testimony before the NLRB.
Was she working at the time of the election?
She was not. She had performed a light duty job that had ended, Judge, some 7 months prior to the election.
Okay. Was she on any kind of compensation program from the company?
She was not, and she was not receiving any benefits.
I understood she was getting workers' comp.
That's a state fund over which the employment relationship has no nexus, Your Honor. She'd be entitled to those funds whether she was employed or not employed.
Is there any evidence or any indication to get workers' comp, you have to be unemployed, don't you?
You do not have to be unemployed to receive workers' compensation. Generally, you are, but you don't have to be.
It depends on full or partial disability.
I beg your pardon?
It depends whether it's a full or partial disability.
That's correct.
Okay. The board in its brief recites a number of things indicating her continuing to be in employment. They're thin, to be sure. The employer asking her to company meetings, inquiring about availability for work, and allowing her to keep her mailbox. They're pretty thin, but they do suggest that the employer had not cut the ties.
Well, Your Honor, that mailbox, which turns out to be a folder in a filing cabinet, I think is minutia. Interestingly enough,
it is minutia, but it's not common for a dismissed employee or a laid off employee, assuming there's a difference between those.
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully suggest that the Third Circuit has addressed exactly that issue in Economics Laboratory, and they found those kinds of facts were, and this is their phraseology, at best equivocal or insignificant evidence. It's interesting that the board wants to put so much significance on the fact that she didn't surrender an ID badge, for example, but totally ignores the medical testimony and her own admission that she can never, ever return to the voting unit.
Let me follow up on a question I asked. In the typical red arrow case, the board has applied that in situations where an employee is on medical or sick leave, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And perhaps there's a rationale unstated, but if the employee is on sick leave as part of the unit, you know, part of the collective bargaining agreement could be increased benefits for being on sick leave or increased medical, the time for medical leave and all that. So maybe that's the rationale. But this case, the red arrow test was applied to somebody who was not on sick leave, was not on medical leave in the sense that the person was not employed at the time, you're telling me.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
Are there any other cases I looked, are there any other NLRB cases where this red arrow has ever been applied to an individual who was not on sick leave or medical leave?
I don't know of any, Judge Randolph, but I can't, again, make that representation to the court because I can't be precisely certain, but I don't believe so. And it's interesting that the courts that have approved Red Arrow have always done so where it's been challenged with some caveat. For example, the Third Circuit in Red Arrow, Economics Laboratory approved the Red Arrow standard, but it said it did so under two assumptions. One, that there was a definite time frame established, and secondly, that there was a greater chance than not that the individual would come back to work. And they said if those assumptions were not accurate, then the Red Arrow standard would be arbitrary and capricious. And it's interesting that the Third Circuit noted as an example of being arbitrary and capricious if it was extended to somebody who was permanently disabled, which is precisely the situation that we have here. And the First Circuit, when they considered Red Arrow, also put a caveat and said if there are ambiguities, those would have to be resolved under the reasonable expectancy of returning to work. I think the position that we have taken here, that in effect the employment nexus has terminated, is overwhelming. Here you not only have a physician's statement, her position had been rebid, she had been removed from the seniority roster, she was not on the Excelsior list, which is the list that we must supply to the NLRB of eligible voters, and that list was not challenged by the union. She had allowed her licenses to lapse that she needs to perform her work. All of that indicates that her employment nexus had effectively terminated, and the board has recognized at page 60.
What's the significance of the union not challenging the Excelsior list about with respect to an employee whom they would not know is in the unit because you didn't tell them?
Well, Judge, if they believe this individual was truly part of the unit, if her name had been admitted from the Excelsior list, I can tell you from personal experience that the union would be calling the NLRB agent and making some substantial objections. It happens all the time.
Well, they have to know the existence of the person who's not listed in order to do that. And when somebody is, let's say, on extended medical leave, they not necessarily have that name.
They may not, but she certainly alleged that she had maintained some relationships or friendships with various people. So,
well, let me ask you this before we use up all your time. Suppose that in this instance there is no indicia of community of interest, none. Everything you've said is uncontradicted and unqualified and stands alone. Is it not rational for the board to maintain a policy that has so few false positives?
The policy
yields very few instances of over-inclusiveness, false positives, and has administrative advantages. Why is it not rational for the board to maintain that power?
Because in...
But unlawful.
In this case, Your Honor, when they have such a position, it turns red arrow on its head, and it turns it...
It has a peculiar, let's say, perverse, unintended, completely opposite of what's supposed to be effect in one case out of 1 million. Right? And the alternative requires a good deal more individual scrutiny.
Well, I don't think the alternative is that difficult, Your Honor. All it would require this court to adopt is either the view of the First or the Third Circuit, and the exception policy of those two circuits would apply.
Could I, Judge Randolph was asking a question as to whether she really was on sick leave, sick or disability leave. I didn't see in your brief any challenge to the basic predicate of Red Arrow, that is to say, her being on sick or disability leave.
Judge, we do challenge that. We do not believe that that is a proper legal standard. We think that no matter...
But I didn't see in the brief you're saying the precondition for applying Red Arrow is absent here, namely sick or disability leave. And if you did say that in the brief, where?
We did not make that statement.
I know you say that Red Arrow makes no sense in this context. I understand that completely. But you aren't suggesting that within its terms, perverse as they may be in the occasional case, Red Arrow was applicable.
We are
except possibly on the termination, to the extent that termination is the equivalent of layoff. You are making an argument on that end, but not on the incoming end, let's say the...
Well, except to the extent, Judge,
trigger for the rule.
That I think we have made it very clear that we do not believe that under any circumstances Red Arrow is a proper legal standard. We think that
yes,
no matter...
No, I certainly got that.
Right.
But just in terms of whether there was any argument as to Red Arrow in its terms being applicable.
There was not.
No. Okay.
We'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Fred Jacob, and I represent the Labor Board today. Your Honors, as Judge Ginsburg suggested, every day across this country, board offices are conducting elections. Those elections involve a number of, always involve complicated issues, particularly in terms of voter eligibility. The board has adopted a clear, bright-line rule here that gives guidance to the regional offices and allows them to quickly and expeditiously determine who is eligible to vote.
State the rule.
The rule very simply is if an employee is out on sick or medical leave or out for medical reasons, I think it would be that broad.
Where's the or out for medical reasons come from? If they're on leave.
They're on leave.
Then if they're on leave, then
if they're on leave for, and I don't have the Red Arrow quote in front of me, actually, an employee on sick or disability leave is presumed to continue in employee status unless and until the presumption is rebutted by affirmative showing that the employee has been discharged or resigned.
That's not, the rebuttable, I don't understand that. Now, tell me, can a person who has been fired or who has quit be on sick leave?
Well, certainly not, Your Honor.
Right. So the rule is simply, if a person is on sick leave, they are part of the unit. This is not a presumption. It's an absolute rule. It's like almost like saying, I thought of an analogy that you say, if a person is breathing, we presume they're alive unless you show us that they're dead.
Okay.
Right.
Well, I mean,
the rule is if you're on sick leave or disability leave, then you're part of the unit. But the question I have is whether this person was even within those terms.
Well, Your Honor, I think...
Because what you say is she was in effect on disability leave. I don't know what that means.
This employee, and I don't think the company has challenged specifically the issue of leave status here. And I think what is notable here, as Judge Williams suggested, is that the company has never really challenged what would happen if Red Arrow applied here. There is zero affirmative evidence in this record that the employer has severed its employment relationship in any affirmative way.
They've said that it's irrational to apply Red Arrow to this case.
They have said that it's irrational to apply Red Arrow.
And that the board didn't sufficiently explain its rationale.
Well, the board has repeatedly explained its rationale in Red Arrow cases, whether it was in Red Arrow itself, its most recent decision from 2006 in home health care, I believe, that we've cited in our brief. Cavert acquisition went in great detail as to the board's reason. So the board has explained over and over again. The cases that come to the courts are the ones with unusual facts. They're the outlier cases.
So if somebody just disappears, they just disappear. They mm-hmm. show up one day for work, and they never show up. And their family doesn't know where they are. And they haven't resigned. Mm-hmm. The employer doesn't discharge them, maybe because the family's dependent upon the mm-hmm. medical benefits. That's still an employee.
Well, the Red Arrow test might not be. I mean, I think the Red Arrow test is only implicated.
They have to show up.
Yeah, they have to show up. Then their family can find them.
Somebody
and yell at them.
To be this person showing up.
Exactly. Somebody purporting to happens to have their ID. You know, the Red Arrow test is only invoked when we know that there's an employee who was employed by the company and then has to leave full-time employment status because of medical reasons. And so, you know, perhaps using the word sick leave, disability leave, cabins it a bit too much. I think the board applies this rule whenever somebody is off duty for
Suppose
medical
there's
reasons.
An airline pilots association,
mm-hmm.
right? And there is.
Sure. I've heard of such a thing.
And a pilot goes on sick leave because he's been diagnosed with macular degeneration,
mm-hmm.
and his eyesight is failing. It's clear he's never going to mm-hmm. be a pilot again, and so the Airline Pilots Association wants to organize it, and there's an election. Can he vote?
Well, Your Honor, I think the question would be whether if the employee is on sick leave. And he has not been terminated.
The company, there's no collective bargaining.
This is a month afterwards. A month after
the disability
yes.
thing.
Yes. A month afterwards, the employee is diagnosed. A month later, he's still on sick leave. I would think that under the bright line rule of Red Arrow, he would be allowed to vote. Now, what the law basically says to employers is, we presume that people who are on leave will be part of the unit, that they retain their essential identity as an employee, as an EMT, as a pilot, until there's evidence that they no longer retain, until the employer severs that employment
so
relationship.
So discharges them, in other words.
So discharges them.
So let me, first of all, this arises, am I correct, only where it would be potentially determinative of the outcome of an election.
That's correct.
Because it's a challenged ballot.
That's correct.
The ballot's open. So actually, we know it would be, in fact, determinative of the election. Otherwise,
yes.
Why bother? So the rule is it basically, the votes are going to be counted against you, employer, unless you discharge this person, create a paper trail. What's labor council supposed to say to the company long before there's any election in the offing? What's their policy supposed to be? Discharge someone if it looks like they're not going to be coming back?
It's my understanding that if an employer, well, Your Honor, it's my understanding that an employer has the right to discharge or sever an employment relationship with an employee who cannot perform the essential functions of the job. It's been a long time since I practiced ADA law, but it's my recollection that if an employee is no longer able to perform the essential functions of the job, the employer has the right to terminate.
The question is, why are you forcing him to, or giving him an incentive to exercise it to the detriment of the employee?
Well, I believe, you know, that may be a side effect of the board's rule, but it is the rare... It is the rare employer, I think, who would repeatedly search through its employee rolls and try to purge them.
In my experience, what happens, particularly in manual labor-type jobs, mm-hmm. where the physical things have to be done in factories and so on and so forth, what happens, if you have an employee who has, say, 25 years of experience, and then they break their arm and they have arthritis or something, that oftentimes what management will do, the employee will go on sick leave,
mm-hmm.
and then management will offer the individual a place in the office.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It and that in a capacity, a management capacity. So, you know, I think to myself, given this rule that the board has, what happens is you have an employee who goes on sick leave, right, and then there's a union organizing campaign, and the employee has already been promised by management that when they recover, you'll get a job in inventory control, back in the office. So that employee then is going to vote in an election determining whether a union comes in? I mean, in that situation, the employee's interest is with management, not with the union.
And that may be the case, and there's a whole area of board law that determines whether the employee would still be in the unit if it's been offered, if he or she has been offered a job in management or a different position. I mean, I think...
Well, was this employee, was Grant, in working in the clerical department, was it part of management?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And to answer your earlier question, she was paid the same rate that she was paid as an EMT, and that's in the record in the appendix before you. Uh-huh. But what's important to...
Well, how do we know whether she was in management or not?
There's been no allegation whatsoever that she was in management. It's clear that position wasn't in the bargaining unit, but there's been no allegation whatsoever by the company that she was in management.
Well, but forgetting the term management, which is a term of mm-hmm. art here, did they give her light duty?
They gave her light duty.
So she was employed doing some other kind of work in the company.
That's correct.
Well, that's Judge Randolph's hypothetical.
Right. Well, yeah, but you know, when you talk about in the Red Arrow thing talks about firing or mm-hmm. the person quitting, but your assumption, the board's assumption in this case, is quit the company, quit the or get fired from the company. Why shouldn't it be quit the job within the company or get fired from the job within the company?
And Your Honor, I think that would absolutely apply as well. Again, there's been no, if an employee, for instance, permanently transferred from a unit position to a non-unit position to deal with a medical issue, I think the board would consider that effective severance under the Red Arrow rule.
Why isn't that this case?
Because
this case,
there's been no allegation that her transfer to the BAC department was anything but temporary until she could recover or not recover.
But if they've made the transfer to another department and all of the record evidence mm-hmm. is that she will never recover, isn't that a permanent transfer?
Well, it's a temporary transfer, Your Honor, because if it were a permanent transfer, she would still be in the job. They removed her from that job when there was no longer extra work for her to do. She was always considered an EMT. She continued to go back to EMT jobs.
This clock stops at the time of the election. Right, we look at mm-hmm. What was she doing, and what was everyone's expectation as of the time of election. She was doing light duty in another capacity for the employer. She had no prospect of returning to a unit job.
Well, Your Honor, she had been doing some light duty 7 months before the election for a temporary period while they determined what her position would be. When that ended, she continued to attend town hall meetings with other EMTs. She was continued, and supervisors asked her to come back.
So the light duty had ended before
that? The light duty had ended before that. And this is an employee, again, I think it's notable, the company has never put forth a single bit of affirmative evidence that it communicated to this employee that her employment was terminated in any way. And that's why the company has to rely on trying to get around the Red Arrow test over and over again. Every one of its arguments is getting around the Red Arrow test.
So it never, if they had said to the employee, your prospects for being an EMT are dim, as we all know, we're giving you a permanent reassignment to a light-duty job. If in this unexpected event that you recover, we will shift you back.
I think that would be an effective severance in such a case. And if you look at, for instance, the case...
So all they didn't do here was put something down on paper, I guess.
The essence of a severance of an employment relationship is a communication to the party, and that was never communicated here. And even if we were talking about constructive discharge,
Well, you said she attended some, what was it?
She continued to attend town hall meetings with other EMTs.
Was that at the invitation of the company?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. Her supervisor invited her to at least one of them, to the April 2004 meeting, and she was paid. The company in its reply brief indicates
paid
for attending the meeting. It says, how could we control who would come to the meeting? I would like to work for an employer who allows me to show up to meetings willy-nilly and then pays me for it. This is an employer that paid this employee to come to the meeting, and that's in the brief and in the record.
But from what you're saying, it appears that a more precise statement of Red Arrow would be someone on sick leave is presumed to be a member of the unit until it's either termination, resignation, or conclusive shift to a non-unit
department. I think the board would view a conclusive shift as a termination or some sort of severance of the employment relationship. I would note that...
You couldn't seriously insist that the person leave the employ of this company in order to...
No, I mean, that would be, that would be absurd, Your Honor, and I don't think the board...
Ultimately, your underlying concern is community of interest.
Exactly. Yeah. The concern is membership in the bargaining unit. And if I can make one final note, the company in its reply brief essentially argues constructive discharge under Red Arrow, which it never argued before. And maybe that would have been a better case for it, but it never made a constructive discharge argument to the board.
I have a question.
Or at least to the court in its opening
brief. One sentence in your brief is the runover from 24 to 25.
Oh, yes, sir.
Furthermore, on the facts, the board observed that Advanced Waste involved a layoff, not simply an employee on sick leave. And thus, the reasonable expectation of return test was not unsuitably applied. I mean, wouldn't the proper characterization, if the board is faithful to Red Arrow, would be to say Advanced Waste involved the termination prong of the exit under Red Arrow. And that sentence suggests the sort of the two boxes, and somebody, the board, somebody says, oh, this is a layoff case, or no, this is a sick leave case.
Well,
but Red Arrow purportedly encompasses both propositions.
I think what the board, certainly there are two boxes in the sense that a layoff case in the traditional economic context is measured by the reasonable expectation of recall standard. A sick leave, sick disability type
layoff,
case.
Layoff meaning layoff is different from termination?
That's correct. In a context, for instance, where, for instance, a construction unit where employers have a project and then they hire employees, and then perhaps the next project they need fewer employees. Mm-hmm. So they may lay off some of the employees there, but then the next project bring them back on. So where the vagaries of the particular employment context grow and shrink, or if you have a manufacturing plant and they hire extra employees to deal with a boom.
Is that what's going on in Advanced Waste?
That's what's going on in the traditional layoff context. I certainly concede to the court that Advanced Waste is an unusual case, and the board has done its best to essentially cabinet to its facts. The board was very explicit in Thorne Americas and Pepsi Cola that Advanced Waste should not be construed in any way as applying a reasonable expectation of recall to sick leave cases. And in Advanced Waste, what did happen was that the employer had filled the employee's position and told him that it was no longer there in addition to the other medical issues. So the board said, at best, it could be construed as a layoff case where the standard would be properly applied.
The difference between a layoff case and a sick leave case is that presumably the employee in the layoff hasn't been fired, but may be subject to recall, so you have to. Mm-hmm. But the individual is not getting paid. That's the whole purpose of layoff, is to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But in the sick leave case, presumably there's some kind of disability payments or medical payments or something of that sort, right? And so you could say that the person that's on sick leave still has a community of interest because when the bargaining occurs, the terms of what the leave should be are going to be part of the terms and conditions of employment. So they, you know, but then if that's the rationale, you try to plug that rationale into this case, it doesn't work because she wasn't getting paid by the company for the 7 months prior to the election. She's like a person that's been laid off.
Well, Your Honor, it's true she wasn't getting paid, but there could certainly be cases under the Red Arrow standard where an employee is unpaid. Where, let's say it's an employee that doesn't offer any sort of sick leave, and the employee is just sick and leaves, and the employer says, well, when you're better, come back. And that would fit under
Red
Arrow.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with whether they're paid. It has to do with whether, at least in the election context, and I think that's what's particularly important here, is that the board, as this court knows, employers who lose an election, unions who lose an election, will do everything they can to get that election thrown out. And if the board makes it possible for parties to litigate if somebody has a broken foot, whether they're going to be able to step on a gas pedal, parties will do it. And the board is trying to reduce that litigation. And there may be cases that have unusual facts like this one, but the rule itself is sound and applied all around the country every day. And I think that's what the board is asking you to enforce. If there are some outlier cases, it may be an unfortunate result. But in a case like this, Ms. Grant believed herself to be an EMT. She showed up at town hall meetings repeatedly. She had contacts with the unit. And as of the day of the election, no one had communicated a discharge or a resignation. And so in her mind, in the company's mind, she was still an EMT, and the company's been able to put forth no evidence to the contrary.
Is it the case that the board uniformly, in every sick leave case, applies red arrow?
In other words,
which means there has to be termination in the broad sense that we've talked about, or resignation. Otherwise, the employee continues in the unit.
To my knowledge,
really, it's quite nerve-wracking to read a sentence like the runover from 24 to 25.
Well, I think to my knowledge, the board applies red arrow consistently and has since 1986 or so. I mean, I think red arrow itself acknowledges that.
It doesn't maintain the consistency by saying, "Oh, well, this is a layoff case, so."
Well, Your Honor, I
forget about red arrow.
I think the board would agree that advanced waste is. To the extent that there is an aberration, a case that ran off the reservation, advanced waste would be it, and the board has done its best to explain that that should not be viewed as contrary precedent. So, Your Honors, I see my time has greatly expired, and I appreciate your indulgence, and I ask the court to enforce the board's order. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, in the brief time I have, I would like to make several observations. One, with regard to advanced waste, counsel makes the distinguishing notation that the position was filled, but fails to indicate that that's precisely what happened in this case. The position was filled. She was taken off the seniority roster all prior to the time of the election. Most emphatically, she was not on sick leave, and most emphatically, she was laid off from her light duty assignment for some 7 months for lack of work.
But you did not challenge board's classifying her as on sick leave for purposes of red arrow. I mean, I didn't see it in the brief. I asked you before, and you didn't point me to anything.
Your Honor, we have consistently taken the position that this individual was not on sick leave.
Where's that argued that she in the brief? The board counsel even says that, well, in effect, she was on sick leave.
Well, that's what he says, that in effect she was on sick leave, but she was never placed on sick leave. She didn't receive any health insurance benefits.
Where is this argued in your brief, either of your briefs?
Your Honor, I will find it for you, but I don't have it committed to memory.
I asked you that in your first round.
Well, I will certainly find that and bring it to your attention.
She never got sick leave benefits?
And never received sick leave benefits, no, Your Honor. And I think it's particularly important in this case to recognize that the NLRB is asking us to go out and affirmatively terminate this person.
She did get workers' comp.
I beg your pardon?
She was getting workers' comp.
She was getting workers' comp, but that's a statutory entitlement under the laws of Illinois, Your Honor.
I understand that, but she wouldn't have been getting it unless she had passed their criteria for being sick.
She was an employee at the time that the injury occurred, and therefore, under Illinois law, she'd be entitled to benefits, notwithstanding what her status may be thereafter. And I think it's particularly important in this case to recognize what the board is asking us to do is to affirmatively terminate her employment. And under those circumstances, I think the court's admonition.
Too late for that. There's no need.
Thank you, pardon?
Too late for that.
That's right. I can't do that now, but I think what this court said in your 2001 decision in Daimler Chrysler is particularly important, where you indicated that the NLRB had been, quote, remarkably indifferent, unquote, to an employer's obligations under discrimination laws. As a labor and employment lawyer, I can tell you there'd be no one worth their salt that would affirmatively advise a client to take somebody who is out because of medical reasons and just gratuitously commit what is an adverse employment action under Title VII or ADA. In addition to that, a leave of absence or something of that nature may in fact be a reasonable accommodation under the ADA. It is important that we understand that these laws march in lockstep and not inconsistent with each other.
Let me just ask you, though, do you contradict Mr. Jacobs' claim that the board would recognize permanent assignment to a non-unit job as either the equivalent of termination or at least as taking the case out of red arrow?
I dispute that, Judge, and I know of no case.
Did you do that in the brief? Because I didn't see it.
I didn't address that issue in the brief.
The argument
that issue was not in the brief.
Having to fire her struck me as quite a compelling argument, but then it seemed to me that the natural follow-up was,
what are the things, short of complete dismissal from the company, that the employer can do?
Well, under the NLRB's position, I don't think that short of dismissal, there is anything that you can do to avoid red arrow. Indeed,
Mr. Jacobs said that if the employee on sick leave has been given a position in management upon return because they can't perform the prior job, that there are cases saying that individual is ineligible to vote in the unit.
I don't know of such a case, Judge. There may be, but I don't know of such a case.
Unless I misunderstood, did I understand you correctly to say that?
There certainly are cases where if an employee has been transferred from the unit to management or accepted a job in management, and the board has rules to determine at what point that transfer occurs and whether the employee...
Okay, fine. Could you supply those citations, but clear it with counsel for the employer first?
Okay. I will send them to counsel and then to the court.
My time is up, but there's no more questions.
Thank you, Mr. Winahan. Mr. Jacobs, thank you. We will await a 28-J letter to copy to counsel. Thank you.